Village Studio, the radio station 1030 KVOI, Tucson's source for trusted news and talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our live line for our telephone interview is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now to Marana, the Marana mayor, Ed Honing. Ed Honing is with us, third generation from a five-generation Marana family. He's served on the Marana Council on three different occasions. He's chairman of the nine-member RTA board. Mayor, how are you, sir?
I am doing well, Bill. How are you?
Doing well. I wanted to ask you, let's talk a little bit before we talk about Marana. What is going on with the RTA? The program is 17 years into its it's a 20-year program. We're in year 17. What is the latest on the RTA Next effort?
Well, it's a tough process, I can assure you that. You know, we're trying to identify the programs and expenditures that would be acceptable to everybody in the RTA Next plan, which would start in 26. And right now we're having some issues on identifying some of that. So
what are the issues, Mayor?
Well, I think we have some differing ideas on where the money should be spent. It appears the city of Tucson wants to spend the majority of the money on transit, and I think the rest of us would rather make road improvements. So we're trying to figure out how to get to the middle there.
Yeah, you got to wonder, would a transit-heavy program be appealing to all the people of Pima County? I mean, you got to look at it that way, right, Mayor?
Well, I agree, and I don't think a transit-heavy program would pass if it went to the voters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of the people in the city of Tucson don't use transit.
Right.
And I can assure you in Oral Valley, Marana, Sarita, Vail areas, and out in Pima County, transit is not our primary issue. It's interchanges or freeway overpasses or ways to get over the Union Pacific Railroad safely are the main concerns of the people I talk to.
Well, this impasse, Mayor, has to be resolved or we're back to square one, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, I'm a big believer in RTA, and I hope that we're able to work something out. But, you know, it's the biggest winner in RTA is really the city of Tucson. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're 50% of the people, you can't get 80% of the money. I'm sorry. You know, you're going to have to allow us all to do things. And when it says regional, I'll talk about a couple projects in Marana, whether it's Twin Peaks or the Ina Road Interchange. Ina Road Interchange is in Marana, but I bet you over half the people that use it are Northwest Pima County, part of the city of Tucson, people that live out in the Abra Valley. It benefits many more people than just the town of Marana. It's a regional project, and you know, when you have a regional transportation authority, I think this stuff should be regional.
Let's talk a little bit about your town. Marana is now the second fastest growing town in the state of Arizona. 75,000 people, Mayor, are expected to live there by 2040. The next couple of years, 2,500 rental properties are expected. And the reason I'm setting this up is because there have been a lot of complaints, people saying, why are we seeing so many storage centers in the town of Marana? And someone was saying, and I don't know if this is correct, that there's nearly 20 storage centers now in your community.
There are many, and I will tell you why. You know, first of all, those people that build storage centers spend millions of dollars on those properties. They do their due diligence, and they don't build them if people will not use them. Hmm. What is happening is we're building more dense communities within in our cities and towns, Marana included. Hmm. And a lot of people have a fairly large house on a lot that's not that big. And if they have barbecues or they have equipment they use for camping or picnic tables that they bring over occasionally and stuff like that, they don't have room on their properties for all this equipment, Christmas decorations, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
It's just getting to the point everybody in those neighborhoods has a storage unit somewhere to put that stuff that's important to them maybe four or five times a year, but they don't have room on their in their own household to store it. So it's coming because of the need.
Mm. So if you got a two, say you've got a two car garage, one half of it is just filled up with all your stuff, and then there's no room for the other car. So you've got to really maybe decide, well, I'm going to move all the stuff to the storage unit.
Well, most of my friends don't have one car in their garage.
No.
The
no.
whole garage is filled full of stuff. And they park both their cars in the driveway, you know. But, I mean, it's kind of getting to that point of things. A lot of people have a motorcycle or they have, you know, ski mobiles or something like that. They don't use them all the time. If they have a storage unit, they put them over there. And if they want to go ride the motorcycle that weekend, they go get it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things. I have heard that question from tons of people. But every time we build a storage facility, within about 6 months, it's full.
Wow. How is Marana doing? What is your overview?
Extremely well. Extremely well. I mean, there is so much business moving into our community. You know, we used to kind of be a bedroom community to the Tucson region. That's no longer the case. There's a lot of employment in Marana now. So, you know, I don't know if you've been out north recently and see those two big 500,000 square foot buildings.
Yeah.
Right there to the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening is Flint Corporation is going to build five of those buildings, by the way. They build those buildings because there is so much need for logistics company or small manufacturing companies. They have a company talking to them right now to rent that entire front building, 500,000 square feet.
No kidding. Wow.
They didn't identify who the company was, but they've told our staff, well, you know, if somebody comes in and wants something that big, if it's not UPS or something, you know, FedEx or something like that, it's going to be a small manufacturing company or something.
Yeah.
And there's just so much need. If you look around the community, Lucid Motors in Casa Grande or Procter & Gamble in Coolidge and Nokia Trucks in Coolidge, we're having those individuals coming to Marana to talk to us because they don't have enough housing for them. And they're building these big corporate structures. Procter & Gamble came and talked to us a couple weeks ago, and the executive that spoke to me said, you know, it was 28 minutes from our site to your town hall.
Wow.
And they're going to have about 500 employees when they're completely, you know, built out to capacity. And there's no they're right there on the 87, which is a new interchange on I-10 and everything. And he said, our people can drive to Marana in 28 minutes and be home.
Wow. So if you go ahead.
We have great schools out here on the north end of town. We're building a new school that will start in the next couple of months, a K-8. You know, we're building schools because people are moving here. We have beautiful parks. And we're getting ready to build a new community recreation aquatic center, We've already approved the funding and everything, and we'll break ground for that later this summer. Hmm. And people want to live here. So,
final question, because I'm out of time, but if you look at your footprint, what percentage is now land that could be developed for housing or commercial? In other words, where I'm going with this, it was one-time agricultural land. Just your rough guess, what percent would still be available?
Oh, a huge percentage.
Okay.
I just went up last week with Ted Maxwell, General Maxwell. I'm sure, you know him.
Oh, yeah. He's on the show regularly. Yeah.
And we flew around North Marana. Ted and I are friends. And I was looking at the neighborhoods in North Marana from Continental Ranch on up. We don't cover 10% of the land right now.
Wow.
I mean, there's just huge amounts of room for growth.
Okay.
And a couple of years ago, we did a study, and there's already programmed in growth for about 200,000 homes.
Oh, my goodness. All right.
Or 200,000 people, not homes.
200,000, yeah. Mayor Honey, always a pleasure to catch up with you. We'll catch up with you down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bill. Have a great day.
Thank you very much. The mayor of Marana, Ed Honey. All right. Coming up next, there is an election coming up in the city of Tucson. We'll talk with one of the candidates. Actually, there's only one contested primary, I believe. And that is in the ward number one. We'll talk with Miguel Ortega right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our lifeline for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The Friday Focus interview tomorrow will be with United States Representative Raul Grijalva. Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News will join me in the questioning. This year, Tucson voters will be electing the mayor and city council members representing wards 1, 2, and 4, the primary election, getting close now, taking place August 1st. November 7th will be the general. In Ward 1, Democrat Lane Santa Cruz seeks re-election to a second four-year term to the council, and she's facing Democrat Miguel Ortega in the primary election. Republican Victoria Lem is also seeking the seat, and this is really the only contested primary. Miguel Ortega, 56 years old, counselor for the American Lung Association, with us on the live line. Miguel, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Bill. Thank you so much for having me on.
Tell me a little bit about why you felt it was time to challenge the incumbent.
Absolutely. And Bill, thank you so much for doing this. It's super important. And by the way, August 1st is the election date, but actually ballots will be landing in folks' homes in about a week, and
wow.
So they'll start voting. Wow. Will start here real soon, so it's around the corner. so I'm running on a foundation of safety and security, Bill. Safety and security, I know that is a top priority for my family, and you really can't do anything without that strong foundation. And as a Democrat, I think that is and should be where we base everything. For me, I'm working toward safe and secure homes. Folks want to be safe from foreclosure, safe from eviction, and I think that we need to continue to work hard to find and build more affordable housing, find more housing stock in the city, and look at best practices throughout the nation. Also, we need safe and secure neighborhoods. Okay, so folks need to know that they are safe in their neighborhoods, that the quality of life is at its best, and that means having a good relationship and partnership with the Tucson Police Department. The incumbent has not the best relationship with TPD. That said, I have a strong record as a social justice organizer and holding the powerful to account. I'm very proud of that work, but at the same time, I don't believe that defunding the police is the way to go. And the incumbent has voted to defund the police, and that's just not where I'm willing to go there. I think that we need to strengthen the police department. I think we need to certainly engage in the reckoning conversation, the reckoning nationwide, but we need to focus more on prevention, not over policing, mental health. And that kind of thing, but definitely got to fund the police. When I pick up the phone, or my mom, my 83-year-old mom picks up the phone, I need to know that the police will be there immediately. Okay. So
yeah,
that's definitely something part of it,
Miguel, yeah. You know how the city works. You previously worked as the chief of staff for former Ward 3 city council member, mm-hmm. Karen Ulick. Mm-hmm. So, Is the incumbent vulnerable? Obviously, you feel she is, or you wouldn't mm-hmm. be running. Do you think it is that law enforcement and that piece that where the vulnerability is, Miguel?
That is one of her vulnerabilities, one of many vulnerabilities. Lane is just not representing Lane's constituents. Lane is just not doing it. And so we've heard that throughout the ward. Lane is led by her ideology, her personal ideology. And I'll give you some examples. When you look at the South 12th Avenue, by the way, that's a perfect example. South 12th, it's a redesign. you know, was meant to provide bike lanes and, you know, more parking, but it was reduced to two lanes, you know, going back and forth. And I'm all for public modes of transportation. We need to look at find ways how to do that. However, Lane basically shoved this idea down folks' throats. You know, in South Tucson, there aren't any business owners or residents who like the design. In fact, they feel that it's more dangerous. There's been cars, you know, hitting the, you know, runaway, those balls, those concrete balls. And so business owners have said that it's more dangerous. And so I say that Lane is led by her extreme ideology, because she presented at the Democrats of Greater Tucson this, you know, this the slide presentation. And in it, there's a video of a gentleman from Bogota, Colombia, who is pointing to a bike lane that's beautiful that he said he helped to build. Then he points to a road to the side that it's all muddy and full of potholes where cars are basically four-wheel driving through there. And he says in this video, we will get to that. We will budget. We will fund the roads once we are done funding and budgeting the bike lanes. Okay. I challenge any resident to that will say, I will challenge anyone that could say that residents believe that bike lanes take a priority over motorists. I don't think there should be anyone that takes a priority. I think that motorists, pedestrians, and cyclists should all feel safe, and we should budget everything. We should try to find ways to make it safe for everyone, and we need to get with the new, you know, way of thinking of alternative transportation. But Lane's extreme ideology, during this meeting, she pointed and said, you know, through the presentation, through showing this particular piece by this gentleman from Bogota, Colombia, that her priority is bicyclists, and she doesn't care if the roads get funded or get fixed. Bike lanes come first. That's just extreme, you know, personal ideology that Lane puts forward and leads with, as opposed to what the residents want.
Miguel, let me ask you, how many people do you expect to vote in the primary? What do the numbers look like?
8,000, 9,000 folks that voted. I do believe that there will be a good turnout. I think people, La Cholla and 36th development, where Lane did not listen to residents. Residents wanted to remain in that zoning. There was a lot of meetings. There were surveys taken. 99.9% of the residents there did not want the condition to be removed, and that's documented facts, Bill. That's documented facts that are at the city through canvassing. I walked in that area. Everyone I talked to, there was one person who didn't quite know what was going on, but everybody else, and I knocked on a ton of doors. People are still angry about that. Lane did not listen to the residents. Lane voted with the developers, they removed the condition. You know, there was also a contentious meeting at Archer Center where Lane said to mentioned to one of the representatives that Lane does not represent that this person's demographics. And so there was a lot of witnesses to that. And there was a Mexican-American resident who begged to differ, spoke up and said, listen, this is a diverse community, and we are all opposed to this. And so that divisive rhetoric, is just not the way to go. You know, mm-hmm. What I see is that we need to be united. We need to try to find common ground.
Right.
That's one of the things that I think that we need to change. And people want to change Ward 1.
Let me ask you in the remaining, sure. I think I've only got about 2 minutes.
Sure.
People may not know who you are. What's your thumbnail biography?
Well, listen, I was endorsed by PELF. Okay, that's an organization that represents 43 unions. Okay, the PELF decided not to endorse any other candidate. No incumbents. I'm the only one that's endorsed. I've been endorsed by the Teamsters, SMART. I've been endorsed. CWA, you know, so I am a working class person. My father was a bracero. He came over as a bracero, worked the fields. I worked the fields as well. And my whole life I've been in prevention, you know, working to help kids that are addicts, and gang prevention, teenage pregnancy prevention. And as you know, Bill, I've also worked as a community organizer on a lot of social justice issues and 5 years of experience as a chief of staff for Councilmember Karen Ulick. And Ward 3 residents, I can walk in any area in Ward 3 and I can talk to anyone there and feel very comfortable with the work that I did there. And I have a lot of folks from Ward 3 who are also supporting me. Councilmember Kasachik endorsed me. Alma, the representative Alma Hernandez, Representative Yolanda. So we have a lot of support here, and you know I feel that the Ward 3 residents are ready for a change.
Okay,
they really are ready for a change.
And your website,
OrtegaForCouncil.com. OrtegaForCouncil.com.
Miguel Ortega, thank you, sir.
Hey, Bill, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Okay, midway point of the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition. We'll talk education. Lots to talk about. Kind of a big day, really, concerning education with affirmative action. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition. This portion presented by Green Things, and we are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, 3384 East River Road. Get ready for the summer rains. Get some beautiful color in your garden. Stop by Green Things while you're there. Check out Zocalo Village, the beautiful pottery from Mexico, Talavera. beautiful furniture, much of it handcrafted from Mexico. And really, there's some beautiful Tucson origin pieces of furniture that was crafted right here in Tucson using mesquite wood, some other local wood. So lots to check out. GreenThingsAZ.com, ZocaloVillage.com, open daily in their 53rd year of business. Our telephone live line, and today we are pretty much all telephonic on the Buckmaster Show, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. All right. Big story today. The Supreme Court guts affirmative action in college admissions. Basically, the Supreme Court ruled colleges and universities can no longer take race into consideration as a specific basis in admissions. It's a landmark decision that overturns long-standing precedent that has benefited Black and Latino students in higher education. Let's call now on our contributor on education, Dr. J. Robert Hendricks, lifelong educator, served as superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, and associate professor emeritus and associate dean of the University of Arizona College of Education, former Arizona Superintendent of the Year. He remains active in the Tucson community. In fact, he's currently the president of the Interfaith Community Services, ICS, Board of Directors. ICS partners with over 120 faith communities, serving more than 52,000 individuals each year. The organization offers multiple programs that assist those facing food hardship, job loss, and financial crisis. Bob, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Bill, and yourself?
Doing very well. Thank you for asking. So, yep. The Supreme Court, this is a big deal, isn't it?
This is huge. We see the breaking news flash on TV all the time. This is breaking news with a capital B.
Wow.
I mean, it is a major, major decision. When I saw it flash on the screen this morning, I just couldn't believe it, because this has been a longstanding contentious battle that really came out of focusing on two institutions, Harvard University and North Carolina, who were accused of reverse discrimination by people who felt there was favorable treatment of a certain class of citizen, notably the Latino and the Black African-American community. And so this, as things kind of worked their way through the Supreme Court, this has been kind of churning for a while, and now we have a decision. And not surprisingly, the vote is along ideological lines, with Chief Justice Roberts writing the conservative majority opinion, with the liberal judges dissenting. And I can't really state it better than reading what Justice Roberts said in part of his opinion. So if could bear with me for a moment, I'll quote from him.
Okay.
He says, "A student must be treated based on his or her experiences as an individual, not on the basis of race." Hmm. "Many universities have long done just the opposite. And in doing so, they have concluded wrongly that the touchstone of an individual identity is not based upon skills built or lessons learned, but the color of their skin. Our constitutional history does not tolerate that choice." So
wow.
That, in essence, is the opinion. Now, there's a little bit of wiggle room in this, because he goes on and say that this does not prohibit universities from considering how the applicant's race has affected his or her life.
Hmm.
This gives a little bit of flexibility in the admissions process, particularly with an application or the interview stage of admissions. But, to solely center on test scores or on, other data such as grades is not going to be enough.
Wow.
I think that, you know, I'm going to guess from my own university experience that universities are going to be very concerned about a dramatic drop in Black and Hispanic students if they're forced to largely rely on test scores and grades. And so what, you know, what's really happened recently is we've moved away, a lot of colleges have moved away from test scores because there is a lot of research evidence that shows that there is a racial gap in scores. It's been a longstanding problem with the SAT and ACT. And so, and we've talked about this before, there's a lot of the larger institutions, particularly the Research One institutions, simply don't have that as an admission requirement anymore. And, you know, Harvard has recently moved away from it, and other institutions as well. So this is going to place more emphasis on grades as a predictor of success. And again, the application interview process, I think, is going to be helpful too. But this is really going to be the bigger problem for the elite institutions who have really narrow enrollment caps, you know, such as a Harvard or Duke mm-hmm. or Stanford University, mm-hmm. To name a few. You know, they have a narrow number of people that they can admit. And so if you take away these previous affirmative action requirements, it's going to be a struggle for them. Other universities, I would say state institutions, community colleges who have more of an open enrollment policy where there's a lot more opportunity for anyone to go to school, they're not going to have as much of a problem with it. It's not going to be as severely affected. But we're talking about what I would call elitist, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but the more premier institutions that have narrow enrollment opportunities, they're the ones that are going to be of most concern about this. But obviously, the whole issue is going to be a major change in scenery for what the admissions process is going to look like. And I'm going to project that that institutions are going to find more reliance on looking at the individual student and making some decisions based on their life experience versus just looking at grades and certainly not looking at test scores, which, you know, we know we have decisive research saying that there is a gap. And I don't know if that gap's ever going to close to the point where it's ever going to be a fair decisive factor as to who gets in and who doesn't get in.
Boy, this is a huge, it's a huge change because
huge.
This goes back, what, to the 60s, right? The affirmative action?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. And there are some other cases that are out there that don't seem to have as much weight and bearing on this. I mean, this is going to be something we're going to continue to talk about. Again, it's going to be a major sea change for universities as they look at what who'd accept into their as part of their enrollment process.
All right, Bob, I want to cover a couple of other items. So why don't we take the break right here? Some of the lowest test scores in decades for kids ages 13 and under. I want to talk a little bit about that. And also, how did the pandemic affect kids' mental health? Those two items when we return with Dr. Robert Hendricks.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International. International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is John Trout. Catch me every weekday morning at 5 before Wake Up Tucson with America in the Morning. Breaking news, weather, politics, and sports on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This time of year, we like to talk about Silver City being a lot cooler than it is here in Tucson. We normally say at least 10 degrees cooler in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Yeah, 90 degrees over in Silver right now, that's pretty darn good. So when you get that elevation, the Mile High City of Denver comes to mind. Well, Silver City's the same elevation, so it's going to be cooler. So check out southwestnewmexico.org before you make the road trip, 3 hours approximately. Silver City, a lot to do over there, a lot of outdoor activities. Where to stay, what to do, and even where to dine at southwestnewmexico.org. Let's continue now with Dr. Robert Hendricks, our contributor on education, the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, associate professor emeritus and associate dean at the UA College of Education, and the current president of the Interfaith Community Services Board of Directors. Why don't we begin, Dr. Hendricks, with some of these test scores are the lowest in decades. We're talking about the particular group of kids under 13, right?
Right. Usually we use the ages of 10 to 13 as kind of a yardstick of how we're doing, because this is a crucial period in an adolescent's, early adolescent's life where they demonstrate that they've mastered foundational skills, such as multiplication and be able to read a paragraph and be able to comprehend what they're reading. And so the scores are terrible. There's no way to sugarcoat it. I mean, they are the lowest they've been in decades. Mm-hmm. And remember, Bill, these 13-year-olds, they were 10 years old when the pandemic hit. So yeah, we're looking at really kind of a 3-year span of time where they're progression academically has not been good.
Kind of like a lost couple of years there. Is this just Arizona, or is this generally the country, Dr. Hendricks?
This is nationally, and where we really see the major hit are with minority students. And again, you know, we're looking at a number of students, you know, who are in the lower economic station in their life that are not scoring well. And these low scores, you know, are really predictive of things that, you know, are really concerning to me in terms of the future. You know, predictively, we look at scores like that and we say ultimately there's going to be lower high school graduation rates. We're looking at probably lower adult income for the future. And most critically concerning to me are higher incarceration rates. You know, when you look at our prison population, and this has always been a startling number to me, 70% of adults who are in prison today, Bill, cannot read above the fourth grade level.
Is that right? I've never heard that statistic. Wow.
And, you know, what we're saying here is, you know, low scores produce illiterate adults. And these adults have a higher probability of ending up in our prison system. So this is big news in a very negative way. And, you know, the federal government has pumped billions of dollars into a variety of catch-up programs, including summer school, you know, small group tutoring, hiring more teachers and staff. And it's really not clear how successful these efforts have been. There's one large district in Chicago that offered a tutoring program this past summer, and they only got about a 10% participation rate.
10%?
10%. And other districts have reported minimum interest, even when tutoring was offered online. You know, the reality, in my opinion, is that despite, you know, the efforts that we've made, it will never compensate for the 3 years, you know, of lost time. I mean, it's just, it's tragic.
Think about this. You've got those 3 years of the pandemic. What has that done to the mental health of these young people?
Well, mental health professionals, you know, have, this has been kind of under the radar, in my opinion, a little bit. But it's, again, it's one of these insidious problems, because mental health professionals report that they're seeing increased levels of depression, suicide, eating disorders, particularly among teenagers. And there's no solution to this, but, you know, they suggest, you know, now that we're out of the pandemic, you know, by all opinions, you know, we're clear of this particular situation, but they're saying now hospitals maybe can devote more time to, you know, outpatient care to people who need mental assistance and what they're calling personal connectedness. And what that really says from the research is that youngsters who feel connected, and I think this is the key word, connected, youngsters who feel connected with their family at home, the community at school, and other avenues such as participation in faith-based communities or organized extracurricular activities are much less likely to experience risk behaviors with substance abuse and violence and depression in their formative years. So in other words, find ways, you know, as a school community, as a parental community, as a community at large, find ways to get youngsters engaged, find a way to connect. And the research says if you do, they're 66% less likely to experience these kind of risk behaviors. So we need to work not only in the school community, but everywhere in our community to find things for youngsters to do where they can connect socially in a positive way with others, you know, find a system of belief, whatever it might be, and, you know, get them back on track, get them out of their mode of isolation, which I think is really, I mean, when you get down to it, that to me is part of the issue. I'm not a mental health professional, but I think isolation, as I've seen it as an educator, leads to these kinds of mental health issues. So let's find a way to connect them, and I think maybe we can start looking at better numbers.
You know, so much of that three-year period was that online learning, and we've talked about this before. How good is it? And you talk about isolation. I don't know. It seems like it would really create these isolation issues, Dr. Hendricks.
Well, I think it did. And, you know, I've certainly heard the stories about the door closing in the bedroom and, you know, the youngsters on the computer, and we don't know what that youngster is really doing, but they're supposed to be in school. And we know that there certainly was a higher rate of absenteeism, even more than in the physical environment. I mean, there were large number of kids that simply didn't show up to the online sessions, and nobody was there to monitor that in the home. And there was just students, you know, were in an abyss, you know, an academic abyss, and nobody was really tending to the oversight of that. And I think teachers were frustrated, parents were frustrated, certainly students were frustrated, and everybody lost. Everybody lost in this endeavor. Certainly there were some good opportunities to learn online, and I think we're going to be able to transport some of those things that we learn back into the you know, the physical classroom. But no one, in my opinion, can ever say that it was a reasonable substitute for being in the classroom, because it just wasn't. It was an inadequate but necessary substitute.
Getting back to our top story, the Supreme Court gutting affirmative action in college admissions, this only applies to higher education. Is that right, Dr. Hendricks?
That's correct.
So there's
higher education, it would be post-secondary. So in other words, everything after 12th grade graduation.
Hmm. So private high schools, some of these elite schools in the East, that these prep schools, that this does not affect those admissions.
Well, it depends. You know, it depends on what their admissions policies are. If they're accepting or rejecting students, in a public school environment, that's not going to be an issue. But if it's a private school, and they're accepting or rejecting students, it is a K through 12 situation as well.
Okay. All right, Dr. Robert Hendricks, always a pleasure. We'll look forward to visiting with you in late July. Thank you very much.
Okay, Bill.
Thanks.
Nice talking to you.
All right. Bye. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition. Congressman Grijalva will be my guest on our Friday Focus interview tomorrow. On behalf of John, engineering and producing the show, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope you have a nice afternoon.